Welcome to the Pat Williams Power Hour, AM 990 and FM 101.5, The Word. This is your hour when Orlando Magic Senior Vice President Pat Williams sits down and speaks with authors who have written books on topics of interest and insight for listeners like you. And now, here's your host, Pat Williams.
Welcome again, folks, to the Pat Williams Saturday Power Hour. So good to be with you here on AM 990, FM 101.5, The Word in Orlando. Pete Paquette, you know him. He does our engineering. Andrew Heard Liska produces the show. And I want to introduce you to Dr. Donald Welch. He's in San Diego, founder of the Center for Enriching Relationships. The book, it's out, The Responsive Marriage, Finding the Path Out of Reactivity. Don, welcome, and I got questions for you. How you doing?
Yes, sir. Well, I'm well, Pat. Thank you for having me this morning. Yeah, we all have lots of questions with our reactivity that we have in relationships, especially with the marriage. So thank you so much, sir, for having me on your broadcast.
Don, I want to ask about that word responsive marriage and then finding the path out of reactivity. What does that word mean?
Well, the reactivity is what happens to each and every one of us. It's kind of like the involuntary, unregulated reactions that stem from the emotional part of the brain. I was discovering this as I was teaching for, oh goodness, a decade and a half, a general psych course and other courses, abnormal psych. And I got really, really enthused about studying how we have all of these involuntary reactions. So an example of that is, say I touch something hot, my hand will reflex or recoil before my brain knows it. And most people would say, no, my brain knows it's hot. And yet your brain does not immediately. It's just a reaction. It's an involuntary reaction we have. So we have hundreds of them. So, Pat, we have, like, for example, we might roll our eyes. We might yawn. We might turn away from someone. We might giggle at an inappropriate time. These are all involuntary reactions that we have. And I've come to believe over these years and working with so many couples, the privilege of doing so, that our reactions may have become our number one detriment to a successful marriage, because these reactions stem from the emotional part of our brain. And so through this book, we're trying to target training and recognizing and understanding reactivity coupled with collaborative efforts to eliminate it from our interactions, and then that we might then become much more responsive.
Dr. Donald Welch is our guest. We're talking about his book, The Responsive Marriage. Chapter one is called Ancient Paths. Don, what's that mean?
Yes, that really talks about the fact that we come from God's history and how he developed us, and this idea of quest for intimacy, that every heart longs for intimacy. And so when we look at these ancient paths that God has created, he created us for intimacy. We crave it, and we search for it because it is a longing that emanates from the image of God within us. So that, for example, the Trinity, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, have an intimate relationship, and God created us to have intimacy with him. I know when Jesus said, Father, I pray that we'll be one, and then I pray that they will be one as we are one. We don't become God, of course, but he wants this deep intimacy with us. And so one of the greatest desires, I believe, in humanity is to be faithfully known and to be understood and loved and given compassion. So unfortunately, this quest for intimacy can cause us to pursue counterfeits to try to get it. But God has designed marriage as a place for us to experience an abundance of intimacy. And this book is all about how to get it or restore it in marriage.
Next topic, erosion.
Yes. Well, this is one of the things that happens to couples, is that there is an immediate erosion. There's a number of features related to that in experts in the business world. Pat, they talk about how we try to influence each other. In other words, the only thing that a a leader has ultimately is influence. We can do autocratic leadership where we tell people what to do. They won't stay long in our companies or with us, and yet influence is all that we have. And most couples erode over this particular issue. They get married, the opposite temperament attracts, and then after marriage, it can attack. We try to make them more extroverted like we are or more introverted like we are. And this book talks all about that. And Pat, I do provide an assessment tool at the end of the book that helps a person understand not only their temperament, and am I more extroverted or introverted? In other words, how do I try to influence my spouse? Or we work on how to respond rather than react, because that's what we also measure. We measure a person's reactivity, and we combine the two. So your normal temperament with reactivity. Normal temperament is how I like to behave. Am I more extroverted, introverted? And then we measure 9 dimensions of a person's reactivity. Like, do I go sullen? Do I become really anxious? Do I over-respond or become reactive in situations? So that's where I think erosion first starts taking place. And part of that erosion, Pat, is also when a couple tends to forget about their expectations and they just begin to function like they did in their own family of origin when they grew up. And then they forget about how to love their mate, how to care for their mate.
Dr. Donald Welch is our guest in San Diego. We're talking about his book, The Responsive Marriage. Don, we've covered ancient paths and erosion. Now tell me about collision.
Okay. Well, with collusion, what happens is that there is a lot of things that happen. The first thing I try to deal with in the book has to do, Pat, with expectations. And we come into a marriage, each of us, with some level of expectations, and we also come into the relationship with past wounds. Many people believe that their past is in the past, and it doesn't affect them today. Others may believe that their past can affect them, but they think they have dealt with it, and it is now irrelevant. The truth is, emotions never forget. So when our reactions to a present situation are out of proportion to the circumstances, we're likely being triggered by wounds from the past. And this reactivity escalates conflict, especially when both the husband and wife are being triggered by past wounds. One of the goals of this book is to train couples to recognize this reactivity and identify its origin and work together to reduce it so that they can repair quickly when conflict erupts. If I could just give a quick example of this, Pat. My wife and I worked on this for decades, how to be more responsive and less reactive. And we went to Costco and this last weekend, and we arrived home, and our garage door doesn't work. And so as I was going into the home, I asked my wife, "Oh, could you just leave the clicker for the garage door so we can open it from the outside, because it's not working right?" And so I walked up and came back down. She had walked up, and the garage door clicker was not there. So then I walked back into the house, and I said, "Oh, honey, where is it?" And normally in the past, we might have really reacted, because she thought she was going to leave the clicker on the front door porch. And I thought she heard me say in the car. And years ago, we would have really reacted to each other. But we've worked on our own wounds from the past. We've worked on ways to be validating of each other, and worked on ways to build trust and choice in our marriage. And so we repaired quickly. Now, I know of couples early on in our marriage, we would have had a problem with it. We might not have spoken for an hour or two. We might have done things like this. But we've learned how to take our reactivity and realize there's ways to respond, and that we can trust the other mate. So these collisions can happen, and that's what we're talking about.
Dr. Donald Welch is talking to us about The Responsive Marriage. Don, I want you to talk about topic number 4. It's simply called Roadmap. Explain.
Yes. So when we look at Roadmap, we're looking at this concept again of responsivity. And I ask my students this question, Pat. over the years at the university, I've asked, when are you aware when you meet someone for the first time that they're safe? So you meet someone, you're standing there talking with them, they with you, and you begin to decide, is this person a safe person or not? Not that we always think that, but sometimes it comes to our mind. And my students, one will say, hey, Prof, I think it's about a couple of minutes and I can be pretty sure that this person's a safe person or not. Another person might raise her or his hand and say, hey, Prof, it's within 30 seconds. And then another person kind of pondering this question says, I instantly know that this person is safe or not. Now, most of us would go, well, we don't really know, but we do have these instant reactions. I know with my wife, the way that females are, they're able to go between the two hemispheres rapidly, so they can feel something and think it at the same time. And I'm not able to do that as a male very well. In fact, 72% of all people who call a therapist like myself to ask for help are women, not men, because men will go, hey, he or she's just that therapist is going to ask me how I feel, and I don't know how I feel, but I can tell you what I think. And so this idea of being able to instantly feel something, this goes back to the reactivity that we have, where we have an instant reaction oftentimes in situations. I believe this idea of a roadmap is to help in the ability to be responsive more than reactive.
My guest is Dr. Donald Welch. He's in San Diego, founder of the Center for Enriching Relationships. And we're talking about his new book, The Responsive Marriage, Finding the Path Out of Reactivity. And when we come back, the first topic I want Dr. Welch to talk about is called road signs. And then we go to rules of the road and then rest stops. So we've got a lot of interesting talk left with Dr. Donald Welch. This is the Pat Williams Saturday Power Hour. You're plugged in here to AM 990, FM 101.5, The Word in Orlando. We're so glad when you join us. Back with Donald Welch right after these messages.
More of the Pat Williams Hour in just a moment. AM 990 and FM 101.5, The Word. You're listening to the Pat Williams Power Hour, AM 990 and FM 101.5, The Word. Now, here's Pat.
Dr. Donald Welch is with us. He's in San Diego. We're talking about his book, The Responsive Marriage. And Don, as I mentioned before the break, I want you to talk about road signs and then rules of the road.
Yes. You know, I think as we drive on roadways and walk on pathways, we depend upon road signs to help to guide us. And these signs inform us about where we are, give us clues about maybe what is ahead, Pat, and then keep us going in the right direction and help us avoid dangers and get to our destination safely. In short, road signs, when properly constructed, reduce confusion and can prevent disorientation. So I call it in a marriage where we have our emotion overt rather than covert. I live in San Diego, California, and actually live not far from where lots of the training for SEALs take place. Sometimes we hear guns going off at night. We're near the ocean here. And when I think of SEALs, they are trained to do covert operations, you know, in the night, things that they're trying to keep people safe or take out the bad guys. And so it's hidden. We want, though, in a marriage for emotion and situations to be overt so that we can see them and be aware of them. And that's why when we have road signs, one way to do that is to validate the other person. It sounds so simple, Pat, but this idea of separating feelings from thought or perception is important. So, for example, being able to say, oh, when we see our little child giggling and crawling, oh, I feel, here are the feelings. I feel excited, elated, thrilled. And the other person would say, oh, so honey, what I hear you saying is that when you see our little child, you name those three feelings. When we name the three feelings, we can then tell our perception. My perception is that we need to be careful that he doesn't fall on that table over there. That would be a perception. But oftentimes couples go only to perception. When a couple is upset, So this is, these are the road signs. When the couple is upset, Pat, what can happen is they'll just debate the facts. We call it in psychotherapy and psychodynamic therapy, we call it flight to intellectualization. So you just debate your perception. And that's one of the more dangerous places for any relationship to be. And I really talk about this in chapter 5 of the book called Road Signs, where we try to help the couple separate their feelings, because no one can say, don't have that feeling, because we already have a feeling. Think of a red truck. You know, if you say, think of a red truck, the person, or don't think of a red truck, the other person's already thinking about it. They're already there. And so we all have feelings, but it's how we manage them. And the Bible talks about how we should do that. In Philippians 4, we all are well aware of the perhaps have even memorized Philippians 4, be anxious for nothing, but in everything in prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God. And then it says in that, as Paul was writing in, from prison in Rome, he was writing to the church at Philippi, he said, God's exact words, he said, and he, God, will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus, which is really interesting. God could have inverted that and said your mind and heart, but the feelings, in other words, your heart oftentimes feels something before it even thinks something. So the road signs in a relationship is to be sure of the overt emotion, not like the SEALs, the training of SEALs, where they're training in the night and they're training for covert operations. We're trying to work for overt interactions with your mate. Or the book is written for people that are interested in a relationship, or they're in the middle of dating, or they may be engaged, or they may be married 1 week or 40 or 50 years. It's really meant for all those audiences. So the road signs is very important. If I can mention one last thing about that, Pat, is that oftentimes people do believe they're saying, I feel, and they think they're using a feeling statement when it's a thought. So this is a misnomer, or this is incorrect about what I'm going to say. When the person says, well, I just feel like you don't love me. Actually, that's a thought statement, not a feeling statement. The way to make it more of a feeling statement is to say, when I experience you behaving this way, I feel unloved, hurt, and afraid. That includes those feeling statements, and it balances the relationship and helps the couple go much deeper in their relationship.
I want you to talk about rest stops. What does that mean?
Yes. Yes. The whole idea of rest stops is that we in our relationships oftentimes forget that we need to rest. When I talk about that, I use some illustrations in the book that couples forget to actually be kind to each other, take time to think about things, reflect. And so I invite couples to do things that are fun. We were speaking at a conference back in the Midwest, and when we were speaking, I asked, what do you all do for fun? What are some things you do for fun as couples? And they began to raise their hands. The couple said, well, we have our pillows, and we kind of run around the house and have a pillow fight. Another couple said they're more introverted. They said, well, we tend to have reading competitions. Another couple said, well, we have nice date nights. And then this couple said this, and this truly happened. They said, we love to mud wrestle. when they said that, I said, tell us more about that. What do you mean mud wrestle? Well, here we are in the Midwest. Sometimes it rains, you know, throughout the year, and it's in the summer, and it was raining, and we were planting a tree in our backyard. And as we were planting the tree, it was a big tree, so we needed to really have a pretty good hole to fill. And so we were digging the hole, and it started to rain, but we're used to rain. So we thought, let's just finish it up, and then just we'll be wet, but that's okay. So they kept digging, and the trench, the hole began to get a little larger, and it was slippery. And so they both had their shovels. They were digging this hole, and he fell in. He slipped and fell in head first. And actually, he stood up and he had mud all over him. She began to laugh at him. And then he didn't like that. So he grabbed her hand and pulled her into the mud. And they both began to have a mud wrestling competition right there in their backyard. And they told the audience, Pat, they said, we never did plant that tree. We've left that hole so that we could mud wrestle whenever we wanted to. And that's kind of like their rest stop, if you will. You know, are we doing the right things? Or are we just doing a lot of good things? That's what we need to look at rest stops. And sometimes marital rest can be so helpful. It helps us to have time for playful and relaxed interaction, and they keep us refreshed and rejuvenated. And oftentimes, they brighten our spirits and draw us closer together. But unfortunately, if we're not purposeful, the frenzy of everyday life can cause us to miss the rest stops and just keep going. While this may be great for reducing travel time, it's detrimental to marital intimacy.
Dr. Donald Welch is our guest. We're talking about his book, The Responsive Marriage. Tell me about speed limit, Don. What's that mean?
Okay. Do we all have, I have a little trouble with speed limit in my own life. But it's, you know, we see the flashing light of a law enforcement vehicle in your rearview mirror, and it generates, I don't know for you, maybe it's never happened to you, Pat, a sickening kind of a sinking feeling in the pit of the stomach like no other sudden event in life. But I hate that feeling, and it feels like you're being caught stealing. But you can have feelings with the speed limit that actually when we go too fast in a relationship, in other words, that we can actually create more anxiety in our marriage. And what we need to do is we need to slow down and take time. When we think about these rest stops and the speed limit combined, that even in our conversation, I think the number one thing I do with couples when they're upset at each other is help them to slow it down. Like, for example, I might say, oh, hey, could you please, when she's talking and she finishes talking, just count to internally. In other words, let's slow down because we're above the speed limit. And that can help to begin to think about what she's saying rather than what you're wanting to say. So that sometimes helps males like myself or females when they're wanting to talk over each other. Have you ever seen a couple that's upset at each other? They're oftentimes speaking over the other rather than actively listening. And actively listening is really the key to intimacy, which is kindness, empathy, K for kindness, empathy, E for empathy, and then yielding. And that's when we talk about the speed limit is yielding to the other person and trying to understand. I mentioned a moment ago as we were discussing this, Pat, that the idea of validating what the other person is saying, saying it back to the other person can really be helpful. In fact, that would have helped my wife and me this last weekend on our Costco. I don't know if you have Costco's there. Mm-hmm. You all do. Okay. And we do, and that's where we were. But we missed each other because we didn't validate what the other was saying. We assumed the other one was understanding what we were saying. But that's a little bit on speed limit and slowing things down and trying to understand the other person.
We've got time for one more. It's the last one in your book, Don. Footprints. What's that mean?
Okay. Footprints, it's so important that when we think about our interaction with each other, it's so important to realize that we do impact each other on an ongoing basis. 65 to 85%, depending upon the theorist, is that non-communication. So what we don't say oftentimes speaks so more. Who you are speaks so loudly, I can't hear what you're saying. We've maybe heard that phrase in the past. But in this final chapter, I really talk about something that's important. So if there are females listening in, that your man would enjoy this, I think, I hope. Because in this very final chapter, I give a word to men. Because I'm thinking that we're more passive today than in past generations. Genesis 3:6 records in vivid detail the passivity of Adam. If I can use this for a moment, because we as men were made to be warriors. I believe that. But in the garden, he was with Eve when she ate, this is Adam, from the tree that God told them not to eat from. And he took no action other than to eat with her when she offered him the forbidden fruit. Every man after Adam struggles with this tendency to go passive or to shift to the opposite end of the spectrum and become aggressive. You know, all of the movies, the billions of dollars that Hollywood makes, the movie is, you know, someone comes in and takes your wife and children. You spend the whole movie going after this guy, and you get all of your aggression out by watching. They finally get the guy and take care of him. And so we either shift from being passive or aggressive. We as men love aggressive movies. At least I do. But both extremes with this idea of tendency and aggressive, both extremes are detrimental to marriages, families.
Donald Welch has been our guest. And what a good one. The book, The Responsive Marriage, Finding the Path Out of Reactivity. You're listening to the Pat Williams Saturday Power Hour. We've got more. Stay with us right here on AM 990 and FM 101.5. The Word in Orlando. We will return.
More of the Pat Williams Hour in just a moment. AM 990 and FM 101.5. The Word. You're listening to the Pat Williams Power Hour. AM 990 and FM 101.5. The Word. Now, here's Pat.
Donald Welch, our guest in that first segment, talking about his book, The Responsive Marriage, Don in San Diego. Well, we go from San Diego to Evansville, Indiana. I want to introduce you to Chuck Elliott. He and his wife, Ashley, have written a book, I Used to Be. And we're so glad, Chuck, to have you. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks, Pat, for having me. Excited to have the conversation.
Chapter one is called Who I Used to Be. What are you writing there?
Yeah. Well, Ashley and I, we found through our losses and working with other people as a pastor and a counselor that whenever you lose somebody or something that you loved, your identity changes. So if I were to ask you, Pat, to tell me a little bit about yourself, what you would probably do is you'd tell me about the job that you have, some of the relationships that you have, what your past has been like, what are you excited about now. So whenever you lose somebody or something in that narrative, it really shakes your identity, and it can make you ask yourself, who am I now? So if I were to say, well, I'm a pastor, or I'm a counselor, or I'm a coach, and if I stop doing those things, I might have a hard time explaining who I am, because so much of our identity has to do with those roles and those relationships. And we really come at this book from an approach of relationships and how it impacts, how it's impacted by grief.
Let's move into the part one. There are five parts. Seeing myself, and the first topic you write about, the day everything changed. What's that mean?
Yeah, well, for Ashley and I, we experienced recurrent miscarriage. That's part of our story. In 2015, 16, and 17, we lost little ones who we were pregnant with. And you have things shift in an instant. You have the day that everything changed. Maybe you have a break in trust in a relationship, which Ashley and I also experienced. And you realize that it's all different now. I didn't ask for this, but things are different. And it can be really just alarming, and it shakes that identity, like I talked to you about just a second ago. It shakes, who am I now? Because I realize things are different. And many times with grief, we see ourselves saying, okay, I'm just waiting for things to get back to the way they were before, but things have changed, and it's going to take some work to be able to figure out what does it mean that things are different now.
Next topic, where I am now. What's that mean?
Well, the thing is, you have to know where you are before you take a step to somewhere else. Does that make sense, Pat? You have to know where you are. Because if I want to take a step and go in a different direction, I have to know where my starting point is. So, all right, am I going to become aware of where I am? And Ashley and I, in this book, we talk about the three A's to change. And we can talk about the other ones, but I'll tell you about the first one. The first one is being aware. So being aware of where you are, what the situation is, what the problem is. Am I going to be able to look dead in the face, dead in the eye, who I am now and how things have changed? And that can be really difficult. It's difficult for us. Difficult for me when we lost little ones and had job change and lost loved ones. And saying, okay, what does it look like to own up to the situation that I'm in now, whether it's something that I made a choice on or it's a unwanted change that I'm dealing with, where am I now?
Next topic for you, naming my grief.
Yeah. You know, whenever we lose somebody or something that we love, it's easier to say, I just feel sad or I feel upset. Sometimes just naming it takes some of the sting and some of the power from it. So for me to say, I'm having a hard day. But if I'm specific and I say, you know what, I really miss that I don't get to go to lunch today with Jim, because Jim was one of my good friends and Jim passed away. I miss that Jim's not in my life right now. Being as specific as you can be about what it is that you're feeling and what it is that you have lost and how it's different for you, it enables you to think about, it's the first step to being able to think about, what does it mean for me to start putting those things back into my life? So if I were to say, man, I'm naming my grief, I'm naming that I'm really upset that I don't get to have lunch with Jim today, that it helps me to identify where my hurt is instead of just avoiding it, not wanting to talk about it and ignoring the things that are going on inside of me. It helps me to say, okay, this is what it is that I'm actually grieving. I'm grieving that I'm no longer married. I'm grieving that I'm not employed at that place anymore. I'm upset that I don't go to that school anymore. Being specific and naming it is really powerful in owning up to the first step of this. You're building self-awareness, really. You're building your self-awareness and knowing that, okay, this is where I am now.
Chuck Elliott is our guest. The book, I Used to Be. Tell me about this topic, Unwanted New Title.
You know, a lot of times we think about a title change, and maybe if a title change has to do with a promotion and work or something that you're excited about, or you gain the title of husband, you gain the title of mother, of aunt, of something like that that you're excited about. But sometimes you gain a new title that's unwanted. I remember, we tell this story in the book, but there was a time that Ashley and I went over to a woman's house right after she lost her husband in a tragic accident. We show up there and she opens up the door and she gives Ashley and I a hug and she just almost collapses in tears. A little later, we're sitting on the couch in silence, and she puts her head in her hands. And she looks up right after that at us, and she said, I'm a widow. I never thought I would say that I'm a widow. We gain unwanted titles when our identity shifts. When you lose somebody or something that you love, your identity shifts. You never thought of yourself as being somebody who's unemployed. You never thought of yourself as being somebody who's divorced, because when you think about those people in your head, maybe in a judgmental way sometimes, you have had negative attributes to those people, and then now you have this unwanted new title. Whenever you go through miscarriage like we did, you realize, well, wait a second, I don't like this title that I can say that I used to be a mother. I'm a parent of a child who passed away. And with grief, many times we gain these unwanted new titles because we're just identifying with something now that we did not want to identify with, and that's an unwanted title.
Next topic for you, giving myself permission to grieve.
You know, I really like this one, Pat, because we often don't give ourselves permission to grieve, because we say that we have permission to grieve if we think the outside world views what we've lost as significant enough that it merits grief. And that is not the way that we're supposed to do it. If you're feeling like you lost somebody that you loved, and you feel like, oh, am I hanging on to this feeling too long, I can tell you that that's an indication that there's something that you need to feel, think, talk to somebody about. You can give yourself permission to laugh, to feel, to be happy. If you give yourself permission to do something different, that's okay too. For Ashley and I, we gave ourselves permission to drive a different way home because we live really close to the hospital where we lost our little ones. I can actually see the hospital from our house, from the second floor of our home. And it was difficult to drive past that hospital because it was a trigger. It was a reminder of what it is that we lost. Now, you might give yourself permission to do something like, okay, I'm going through a really hard time right now, and I'm going to give myself permission to stay in bed. Maybe for a day, that's something that happens. Now, we understand that we can give ourselves permission to do something for too long, and it causes other problems. I don't think that we need to stay in bed for days and days on end, but allowing ourselves to take a day to do that. And Ashley and I can drive past that hospital now and don't take another route, but giving yourself permission to shift your behaviors helps you to recognize the grief and to process it instead of just pushing through, pushing through, pushing through. And the unintended impact is you become numb. So if you give yourself permission to grieve, you will find yourself being more healthy and processing your grief in a better way.
We've got about a minute and a half before the break. Talk to us about exploring defense mechanisms.
So a defense mechanism is anything that we do that is protecting ourselves. Okay, so a defense mechanism could be that you avoid. You avoid what you don't want to feel because you're in pain. So let's explore the defense mechanism of avoiding. How does that help you? Well, it helps you avoid pain, which is a good thing. And understanding that there's good underneath the things that we're doing, even if they're a defense mechanism, can help us to understand what do we need to put into our life to make sure that our needs are being met, because denial is a defense mechanism. Well, that helps us to do something, but in the end, that it can hurt us. Displacement is another defense mechanism, that we're not dealing with the emotion where it's supposed to be directed, but we're putting it somewhere else. And we go more in depth into these, and my wife, as a licensed counselor, has a solid and just a great, strong clinical approach to helping people understand those things and those defense mechanisms in language that anybody can understand.
My guest is Chuck Elliott. We're talking about the book that he has co-authored with his wife, Ashley, I Used to Be. We've got more with Chuck. Stay with us. It's the Pat Williams Saturday Power Hour, and you're tuned into AM 990, FM 101.5, The Word in Orlando. Back with Chuck Elliott right after this.
More of the Pat Williams Hour in just a moment. AM 990 and FM 101.5. The Word. You're listening to the Pat Williams Power Hour. AM 990 and FM 101.5. The Word. Now, here's Pat.
Chuck Elliott is our guest. He's in Evansville, Indiana. The book, I Used to Be. Chuck, I want to jump to part five of your book because there's so much meat here. And the first chapter, where to go from here? What are you going to tell us, Chuck?
Well, whenever you lose somebody or something that you loved, you have to make the decision, okay, what's next? And we try to tell people that you are not just moving on, because sometimes people tell you that you need to move on, as if you're forgetting or you're disrespecting who it is or what it is that you loved. But we try to teach people that you can honor who it is and what it is that you lost, and then you can also make choices to move forward. So you have many options of ways that you can incorporate this loss into your life as you move forward. Now, sometimes you think that you don't want to do those things, but recognizing that even if something was difficult, there were things that you loved about that situation before you lost it. We all need to feel like we're moving forward. We're moving forward because we have people who are in our lives, and we don't want to just stay the same. We don't want to miss out on the relationships that we still have, the opportunities that we still have. And as people are moving forward, I want people to recognize that grief and joy can occur at once. You can be grieving and you can also be happy. You can also feel joy. Ashley and I, for well over a decade, have been coaching couples premarital couples and couples who are married, and helping people get better than average relationships. This could be helping people who are struggling or working on certain things and need coaching for it. And something that I often tell people is that you could be working on your relationship and rebuilding trust after something difficult and also enjoy your relationship. It's okay to enjoy each other and have good times, even though you're working on something hard. And sometimes we tell ourselves we need to punish ourselves and feel bad all the time because we're working on something that could be hard. So grief and joy can coexist, and that can help you feel released to what it is that you're moving towards next.
Now, Chuck, I want you to tell us about processing what I have learned.
Whenever we go through loss, it changes us. And like I said earlier, Pat, it's not just a matter of waiting until we get back to normal, because normal is something different now. You're finding a new normal. But you've learned a lot through this process. See, you've learned, and through your hurt, how you could empathize with others, how you could care for your neighbors. You could make better investments in your personal self-care. You can consider the lessons that grief has taught you. And grief teaches us lessons. Maybe it teaches us that we realize, you know what, my relationships weren't as strong as I thought they were before. Maybe you realize that, oh, my faith isn't as strong as I thought that it was. And you know that, okay, I can have a stronger faith. You know what? I need to have relationships. I need to go to the gym. I need to be involved places, because that's going to give me stability and strength in ways that I'm going to need in the future. And it makes you a resource for other people who've experienced grief. When you go through and you do the work, like we described in I Used to Be in this book, it makes you stronger for the relationships around you. And it empowers you to help other people who have gone through things like you've gone through.
Chuck, tell us about I Have Something to Offer Others. Where does that fit here?
Yeah. And I was alluding to that a little bit at the end of what I was saying before. But you do have something to offer somebody. You have something to offer somebody because people need what it is that you have to say, and the things, the perspective that you have to give. And sometimes we tell ourselves that, all right, I've gone through this loss, and that means that I'm maybe not as valuable as I used to be. Maybe your used to be could say I used to be valuable, but that's not true. God doesn't waste a hurt. God doesn't waste what it is that you've been through, but we can shut it down so we're not available. See, God made us for relationships. When we withdraw from relationships, we just find ourselves hurting even more. And sometimes when people find themselves stuck in grief, it's because they're missing this stage, this process of seeing how they have something to offer other people. And if you miss out on that, other people are missing out on that. If you were to go back and to think about the loss that you have and when you were maybe in the early days or in the middle of it even. And if somebody would have reached out to you and been the least listening ear that you feel like you needed, how could you have an impact on their life? How could it have had an impact on your life if somebody would have stepped in at that moment that you needed a voice of wisdom, a voice of calm, a voice of reason? And you can be that. It doesn't mean that you have to be perfect. It doesn't mean you have to say all the right things. It doesn't mean you have to say everything perfectly so you take away that person's pain. But what it means is you're allowing God to use you in those moments when he prompts you. And he'll prompt you. He'll prompt you to be what it is that that person might need in that moment. And you have a unique ability, unique voice, unique experiences that set you up to be exactly what it could be in that moment.
Chuck Elliott is our guest. He's co-authored the book, I Used to Be, and you end your book with this this chapter, Becoming the Best Version of Me. Can you expand on that, Chuck?
Yeah. See, we want people to reframe. So if you were to say, I used to be strong, if you were to fill that in on the front cover of our book, if you were to write in there, I used to be strong, we want you to be able to say that I used to be weak. Or if you used to say, if you say, I used to be hopeful, you can say, I used to be hopeless. Because as you do this work, you're finding the places in your life where there is hope, where there is promise, where there is strength. See, I can read something from the book for you. It says, as you press on, fill in the blanks. I used to be, I am, and I will be. Here's an example of how to do this as you're becoming the best version of yourself. I used to be crippled with grief. I'm working through my loss, determined to help myself so I can help others, and I will be victorious in Jesus' name. We know that if we are not intentional about directing our thoughts and our behaviors, we will succumb to temptation. We will think negative thoughts about ourselves. We will not become the best version that God is calling us towards. We will fall to a lower level because that's where our nature takes us. We have to continually, like, take our thoughts captive. We have to continually take this identity captive that might want to be stolen by the outside world that tells us that we're not worthy anymore, or where it's not a big enough thing for us to grieve, or we're not going to be able to accomplish anything because we have gone through too much tragedy or too much hurt. We try to coach people to fill in the blank with where it is that God is taking them and not just identifying themselves as the loss. But when we start off in our work, many times we have to go right there and name who it is, what it is that we lost. As we recognize that, we can talk about what does it mean for us to become the best version of ourselves.
Chuck, I want you, in closing, and we have about 2.5 minutes, mm-hmm. I want you to summarize part 4 of your book, Reframing Grief, Seeing Grief from a New Perspective, Recall the Good, Reframing My Title. I just want you to summarize that for us.
Yes, sir. So when you reframe something, it means that you change the way that you see it. What are the words, thoughts, feelings, and behaviors that surround that situation and that loss? What we try to do is we see, how is it that we can recall the good? Many times if we're working with somebody who has recently gone through a divorce and we say, okay, we're going to recall the good, they might have a difficult time, understandably so, in that moment. But you got married for good reasons. You got married because you were wanting to be connected. You were getting married because you love marriage, because you want that in your life. You want that connection. And remembering that good part of yourself will help you to not shut that down. Because just because a relationship ends doesn't mean that you need to be shut down to love. You can reframe your relationships to say, okay, I don't have that part of that relationship anymore, but what do I need to do to incorporate love and connection and quality time into my relationships? We also talk about, okay, how am I going to reframe this and bring part of this relationship into the next stage of my life. We encourage people to do a project, to write, to build something, to do a paint project, which is something that Ashley has helped people go through, doing a pour over paint project and thinking about the layers and the ways our lives have changed. To this day, right now, I have a couple pieces of gifts and pieces of wood and different things that are on my front porch that remind me of the people who I've lost, who I was close to. There's different ways that we can reframe some of these losses and think about what is it that we're carrying with us as we move to the next stage.
Folks, our guest has been Chuck Elliott. He and his wife, Ashley, have written this remarkable book, I Used to Be. And I hope that our time with Chuck has been as helpful to you as it has been to me. Well, folks, you've been listening to the Pat Williams Saturday Power Hour. We gather like this every weekend. So glad when you join us. right here on AM 990, FM 101.5, The Word in Orlando. Have a wonderful week ahead. We'll see you next weekend. God bless.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of the Pat Williams Power Hour. Join us again next week at this time, where faith comes by hearing. AM 990 and FM 101.5, The Word.